This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 321. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Attack of the 3D Gimmick Month continues. A League United No More. Bruce needs a chiropractor. Babs auditions for WWE. Dynasty's Red. And a Robo Grandma. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, September 14th, 2014. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, 3D Gimmick Month continues. I'm still not impressed with the covers.
Yeah, we were going to get all plain covers this month, but or this week, but again, the comic book store didn't have all of the plain covers, right?
And most of the stories are still kind of meh, and we know they in the end aren't going to count. In most of them, something terrible happened and now there are consequences. That's pretty much how they all go. But a few of them weren't bad this week. Future's End, Justice League United number 1 by Lemire and Doherty. This is actually a crossover within the Future's End crossover, and it's a crossover with the upcoming Justice League one-shot. Equinox, the not-yet-a-hero Mayabin, of course, we're in the future here, stops a bad guy in Canada, then gets a telepathic call for help from Martian Manhunter. She goes to see Animal Man, who's now retired, and she asks for his help, but he refuses because he's made a promise to his wife.
Well, it's about time he kept that promise
to
his wife.
Exactly, because he's promised lots of times and then blew it off.
Yes.
The JLU team was mostly taken out in the war that they keep referring to throughout this whole Future's End deal. So she has to go ask the Justice League for help. And the Justice League is now composed of Flash, Cyborg, Stormbringer, who I'm still not sure who this character is, Vostok, and then Wonder Woman, Arsenal, and Superman are all busy somewhere.
As is Batman.
And Dawnstar, who's from the Legion of Superheroes. And we know there's going to be a crossover between Justice League United and Legion of Superheroes, like in the next issue, regular issue of Justice League United. It's going to start this whole storyline with the Legion of Superheroes. So apparently the Legion were somehow left in the 21st century when that all that's over with.
Or at least part of them.
And we learn the major baddies were put in a secret prison on Mars. And Martian Manhunter is the warden and keeps them psychically calm, but now something's gone wrong, and a prison break is in progress. John's been taken hostage by Gorilla Grodd and apparently Captain Atom.
Yes.
And now Captain Atom is a bad guy. And we'll see the conclusion of this next week.
Now, I have a couple problems with this issue. With this story.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good story. Don't get me wrong. But you have one person, Martian Manhunter, keeping this population calm. And then he calls for help. And you bring in the only ship, the only way they can get out of this bubble.
Yes.
And you bring it inside the bubble.
Yeah.
Why?
Not a lot of thought put into this.
No.
It really wasn't a great strategy.
Now, if you're going to have a prison on Mars, why not have Martian Manhunter in a separate little dome or bubble away from the prison?
Yeah, because he's telepathic. He doesn't, clearly he doesn't have to be with them.
And then if there's a problem, you go pick him up out of that bubble instead of, you know, providing the escapees with the means to escape.
Yeah. Very good points. This did actually remind me of Kingdom Come and the idea that they created this prison. In that case, it was in the wastelands of Kansas. Kingdom Come is based on a future DC concept.
Right.
In this case, Mars makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Because they can't get out unless they have a spaceship.
Right.
Which they just brought to the escapees.
Yes. Future's End Batman number one by Fox, Snyder, and Akko. We haven't seen Bruce so far in Future's End, and we just learned why. His back was broken again during the war. And since then, he's been working on some sort of secret plan, but needs a special MacGuffin that only LexCorp has.
Doom Patrol serum, basically.
Yeah, the Calder formula or the Calder thing. He has this high-tech suit that will basically hold him together physically for about 40 minutes, just long enough to break in and steal the stuff. Alfred reluctantly assists, and it looks like they're in a basement somewhere and not in the Batcave. We learn the suit has what Bruce refers to as the Allen Protocol, as in Barry Allen, that mimics the Flash's powers.
Not going fast necessarily, but vibrating through things.
Right. So this helps him get through the layers of security at LexCorp while he listens to Lex's recorded voice congratulating him for getting so far. There's deadly gas involved. There's various robots. There's a cryo room. And Bruce finds out that Luthor is still working to clone Superman, and there's a Bizarro there that fights Bruce. Bruce barely manages to escape with the MacGuffin, and it allows his plan to work because Bruce is trying to clone himself. Because, quote, Gotham must always have Batman.
Yeah, so he's theoretically aged this clone to his own age, and except he's physically perfect.
And he's going to transfer his engrams into that clone.
I don't know if that really seems like something Bruce would do.
Nah. Especially, and as Alfred points out, he has this legacy, and there's all these other heroes that are fighting in some way inspired by Batman. That's his legacy. He doesn't have to keep doing this.
Yes.
Future's End Batgirl and Future's End Birds of Prey number one by Simone, Guerin, Marks, and Rocha.
I think you can really see Simone's mark in here.
Oh, absolutely. This is another two-parter, but this time in the same week. And we begin 2 years, and not 5 years from now, at Barbara's wedding. And James Jr. crashes the party and says he will kill her unless her new husband jumps off the ledge, which he does. And so she is so devastated that she quits the hero business and disappears, and Barbara just kind of ceases to exist. And then we got to 5 years from now, where there are three Batgirls being led by Bette Noir, a.k.a. The Beast, who we
the
don't...
The Black Beast.
The Black Beast. And the three Batgirls are Cassandra, Stephanie, and a 12-year-old Tiffany. Now, we pretty much assume who Cassandra and Stephanie are, but we have no idea who Tiffany is. That's pretty much a brand new character as far as I can tell.
Right. Well, if it's 5 years in the future,
right,
you know, she wouldn't be old enough now to be.
Right. And we meet Bette Noir, who looks like a lady wrestler, and it's Barbara. So she apparently spent years in the Gotham underworld taking out kingpins one by one.
And I wasn't sure if it was like she killed them,
or just screwed up their organizations, or severely injured them.
It was very unclear.
And she wound up working for Bane, who trained her mercilessly and even offered her venom. And she had a chance to kill him, but decided to leave instead because she didn't want to kill. So presumably, she didn't kill these other people in the Gotham underworld.
Okay, yeah, you'd have to say that.
Now, Bane is in Gotham, and the battle is on. And he taunts her and says she wanted him to put her back in the chair. Basically, wanted to break her spine so she'd be back in the wheelchair again. And she says, no, she wants to live. And it turns out she never took the venom. It's just training. I don't know how the just training beefs up Babs that much.
Right.
Because she pretty much looks like a female Bane. Now she has a family with these three Batgirls. So that's the first issue. And then over in Birds of Prey, Black Canary, again, in the future, is now leading this group of women. They're what's left of the League of Assassins. So Dinah took over that group and reformed it, and now they fight against modern slavery. And as they do so, they collect new female recruits along the way from the slaves. And now she has proof that the kingpin of that group is in Gotham, which brings her up against Bette Noir, who is protecting the guy as hired help. And of course, Dinah and Babs fight it out, as that's what always happens when two heroes who haven't been together for a while meet. They have to fight.
Exactly.
It's just comic book etiquette. And then Dinah explains what's going on and offers Bette the chance to join them, but she refuses. I have to say, I really like this version of Black Canary much better than the main Birds of Prey storyline.
Yes, she's more determined and she uses her powers well.
Right.
I really liked the idea that there would be ear protection that she could give to her allies.
Right.
That would block out everything except like a speaking tone so that she could still talk to them, but her powers wouldn't affect them.
Right. Because in the regular title, that's always an issue. It's like, okay, well, you guys are going to be deaf for a minute, so.
Right.
Astro City number 14 from Vertigo by Busiek and Anderson. This is the second half of the Old Lady Who Fixes Robots story. So this woman, Ellie's on trial after her robots commit crimes. And meanwhile, another old woman who's in armor, which is almost...
clearly villain armor.
Villain armor. Very Kirbyan type armor. She's gloating about the whole thing. Ellie is broken out of prison by one of the robots. And she returns to her home in the desert to talk to her nephew, who we know caused this whole thing. He was trying to make money, and he saw a deal where basically he could farm out the robots to bad guys. And so she tells him her story that we've kind of gotten hints from in the first half.
And it's almost like she's just now remembering most of it herself.
Right. She was a robotics genius at a prestigious university with an equally genius roommate, Vivian, who worked together, but the other girl has plans. And she decides to scramble Ellie's mind so she won't stop this woman, Vivian. And she just wants more power. She just wants to be protected and have enough power to be protected. Vivian, of course, becomes a supervillain because that's kind of the thing you do at this point. While Ellie's mind takes decades to actually recover. And as you said, only now is she getting her memories back about this. And now back at the trial, a replica Ellie is fooling everybody so far when a group of robots attack who want their leader released, and the heroes show up for a fight, and then Ellie returns and exposes Vivi Victor, a.k.a. Vivian, and the robots are ordered to kill Ellie, but they can't because Vivi Victor has been trying to set up all these robots and to control them and has used Ellie's engrams basically to set up the robots. So they see her as their kin. They won't attack Ellie and trust her. So Samaritan grabs Vivi and takes her off to jail while Ellie returns to her home and finds the heroes there who want to help and protect her because they say you have these incredible skills and they're needed. And she refuses and says, oh, I'll be fine. And they're like, well, I guess she's tougher than she looks.
Right.
So again, this is what Astro City does the best, which is takes one of these supposed civilians. And it's like, well, there's a hero reference in here. But this person is certainly not a superhero by any means. But
they're living an ordinary life. It's
exactly.
People living ordinary lives and how they're affected or, you know, what their secrets are.
Exactly. So I really enjoyed that. Couple quick news and rumors going out there. Because we've just gotten past or just in the middle of new fall TV, they're getting prepped for what the next fall TV is going to be or what the replacement shows are going to be. So there's lots of rumors going about. There's rumors now of a Legion of Superheroes movie. which frankly would kind of make sense because with Hunger Games and...
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know, I mean, it seems a really good fit to do. And they've DC at this point has a whole bunch of these mysterious scheduled movie slots to fill, which they haven't said what they're going to be. Legion would be a good bet.
Well, but they'll screw it up somehow.
I'm sure they will. Meanwhile, there are rumors of a Nightwing / Titans TV show and a Supergirl TV show.
Both live action, we should
say. Both live action, you're right, right. Both would be decent choices for them to do. The question is whether they're going to be in any way related to the Arrow Flash continuity.
Or to the Gotham.
Or the Gotham continuity. Or the Constantine continuity. Or the or the Smallville continuity. That's the trouble. You don't have a unified universe going on here like Marvel does.
Yeah, Marvel has the unified movies.
Then you have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is in the same universe.
That's true. Yeah, DC really needs to focus their efforts a little bit.
I would think. And then news just came out that Booster Gold and Blue Beetle are going to join Justice League 3000. But it's not the new 52 version of those characters. It's the pre-New 52.
So the good ones.
Yeah, the good ones. And so what this means is, and they stated this, Justice League 3000 does not take place in the New 52 universe. It takes place in an earlier version of the DC universe, which is great because, as again, it's going to be the Bwahaha Booster and Blue Beetle, who apparently they wake up in a cryo chamber after 1,000 years. And the last thing they remember is that Max was mad at them for something, which is generally what they were, was status quo for the Justice League Bwahaha era.
Which means, of course, that Max never killed Ted in that continuity.
Exactly, and they've stated that. Sorry, there's no Who's on the Cover this week because it is the fall TV preview issue.
But I did make Mark play it, but not on the air.
Yeah, so we will be talking about that on From the Pop Culture Bunker. So be looking forward to that.
Mark loves the fall TV preview.
I do. And just want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. And you can always call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.